I do think this could be Dubas's, for lack of a better phrase, Blake, his summer of Kawhi or summer of DeRozan. I do think he will try to do something big, potentially.
7:03 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford and Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. J.D. Bunkus from Fan 590 in Toronto is going to join us in a moment to kick off hour two. This hour of Halford and Bruff is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. To the phone lines we go. I listened to him this morning on my drive in just to get a sense of what Toronto is feeling right now. It is J.D. Bunkus from Fan 590 in Toronto here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, J.D.? How are you?
I am poor.
Yes.
But I will, you know what, though? I am a gracious loser. And so I would like to congratulate the city of Vancouver on their Stanley Cup, the closest thing they will ever get to it, the loss of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Congratulations. It's your Super Bowl. I know what it means to all of you. And I just want to say that it's awesome to see you guys all so happy this morning. I'm sure it's raining there. It's like dark, cloudy, whatever, windy. But you have your Stanley Cup, and that is the Toronto Maple Leafs losing.
JD, I don't want to rain on your parade, but things might be worse than you think they are because I actually felt sorry for Leafs fans.
I know.
This
I know.
One.
That's
like
the worst.
I went from being like, last year I was laughing hard when the Leafs blew it to the Montreal Canadiens, but this year, for some reason, I don't know if it was like they tried so hard or the games were really entertaining and I felt like appreciative that the games entertained me or that I felt sorry. Like there was still part of me that was like, that's pretty funny. Was this the worst one? Was this the worst one of all the losses? Was this the worst one?
No, the worst one was the Montreal one because it's not really a rivalry because they never played each other. And then like, Toronto, this is why you guys didn't feel as bad, is Toronto was humbled a little bit. The entire city, the fan base, whatever. Like, I know that we're insufferable. There's the most of us. It's where the most of the media hubs are. And so you end up getting way too much information on Leafs players. And if you care about other hockey, like, I'm from out west. I know how this operates. Like, it is what it is. Like, there's some painful truth to it. Like, if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan, the amount of coverage you get for your team nationally compared to the Leafs, even when you're good and they stink, is insufferably different. It's hard to watch it. And then it's even worse when you're on social media and, like, there's a 10 billion Toronto Maple Leafs fan accounts that all have, like, some combination of Matthews, Marner, and Nylander in their mentions who, like, act as though this franchise has won something with this, like, real, just annoying level of defiance about their lack of success. I get it. It sucks. And last year during the North Division, Toronto thumped everybody. Like, if you guys recall, there was one series against Edmonton where it was, hey, these are the two best teams and let's see how they face up against one another. And Toronto thumped them, like shut down McDavid. Draisaitl had some like crybaby quotes at the podium and people in the city thought like, holy crap, the North Division is kind of cheap, but here's Toronto finally gets to be the bully in Canada, right? Like you finally have it where the cocky, arrogant, quote unquote, supposed to be the Yankees of, I don't know, the hockey world, are actually good and everybody has to be fearful of them making a deep run. And they get embarrassed by a team that picked first overall this year. Like they're up 3-1 to a quote unquote rival and they get stumped and they get stoned and they can't overcome like the smallest little adversity and they lose. Now you just have Habs fans forever, right? That just get to have that. Like that's just a thing. That's a real thing. And in Canada, you guys know this, like, none of us win. All of us are losers. We're all just different levels of losers. And so we just have to debate with one another, like, who did the worst losing the latest? Like, that's what this is. So that one sucked. This one was a little different in the sense of you could really tell the stars showed up. And this was kind of like the whole formula. So this is why this one stung, is that you go, wow, Matthews, Marner, and Nylander, and Tavares come the end of it. They're clicking, and Morgan Riley's going, and they're getting some goaltending where it's not backbreaking for once in their lives, and they still couldn't do it. and you end up in the end of that series, and now you have like micro analysis of every little thing. And also, this will probably bring you more joy than anything, the fan base is at each other's throats. Mm. Normally, this is the only time where Leafs fans all come together and go, we're pissed off, we're sour, we want changes, we want blood, and all of us get to bandy together in our misery. But now, the worst has happened, which is that they lost in a way that's confusing, so people all have different opinions, yeah. And they're all just tearing each other's eyes out. We're in a dirty pit right now, just clawing with each other, fighting and slapping out here, because anybody who has a thought is a wrong idiot. There's people who want to bring it back. There's people who are so down bad in this city from losing that we're starting to go like, well, we lost better this time, so that's pretty good. It's a nightmare. So, yeah, it's horrible. It's a hell. I think I might actually be in hell. It's bad. Sorry, that was a long rant, but, yeah, it's bad. It's really bad.
One, I saw the fight video as well. Yeah, the fans have definitely begun to eat one another, which is always a great thing to see.
Can we get some guys in the city who know how to throw a punch? That was the biggest embarrassment of this all. How do you grow up to be in your early 20s at least and not know how to, like, throw one punch?
Is that wall still standing? Crazy. Because that wall took quite a haymaker.
This morning, I alluded to this earlier. This morning I was driving in, appointment listening to hear you guys, because I wanted to get a sense of where the fan base was at, obviously, because you actually quite succinctly put it together there. It is a wide range of emotions and a lot of people feeling and saying a lot of different things. After any significant loss like this, the question always becomes, what do we do now? What happens next? Yeah. It's inevitable. And, you know, we played the clip from Friedge. It was on your show earlier, and he coined the phrase, maybe Dubas has his, quote, summer of Kawhi, which for those that don't understand what that reference is, it's basically you go out and you make that big, bold move designed to take a good team over the top to make it great. My only pushback to that would be that they have the Hart Trophy winner, possibly, a 60-goal scorer, a superstar. It's not like they need to go out and acquire a superstar. I understand the sentiment that Friedge had. I'm just curious, sir, when you heard that, do you agree or disagree with the sentiment?
So here's where I'm at with it is I think smart organizations have just about everything always on the table. I think it's really kind of stupid or you're not doing your job if you're not at least open to the idea of taking a big swing or shuffling the deck chairs a little bit more than they have in years past. Like, I understand anybody that looks at this Leafs team and says, oh, man, they're right there. Like, you've just got to run it back because if it's any other team than Tampa and whatever. There's two things I have, though. One is I don't think that this Tampa team was the Tampa of last two seasons. Like, they just weren't. And it's like, all right, people are telling this almost like they just – I think it's getting counted a little differently. But anyways, they've had 10 chances to eliminate a team since 2018. 10 chances, 10 games, and they've lost them all. They had 4 games in a row against the Tampa Bay Lightning where they conceded the first goal of the game and were working themselves out of a pit the entire time. I don't think that these guys have earned the right just because they lost in a game 7 to say that nobody is getting moved off this roster and it's going to be a total run back. If I'm Kyle Dubas and I get to keep this job, which it appears he is going to keep the job, I look at it and say we are close, but we need more depth down the lineup in terms of the forwards. Like, this is another year where just it felt like there's two lines of no force and no impact for on the scoring. And so if a guy like Nylander, and he's the only guy because he can't move Tavares, and you're clearly not moving the other two guys because they're, like, unbelievable, you know, like they're once-in-a-lifetime players for your franchise in Marner and Matthews. But if someone comes to you with a Godfather deal for Nylander, because they feel like, man, that guy actually is a superstar, and we can give you two good players, like two really quality players for a higher ceiling guy, I think you at least have to entertain it. I'm not saying you make a trade for the sake of making a trade, but like if you're keeping Dubas, then he's probably going to keep his coach in Sheldon Keefe. That's like his guy who he's been paired with since the Marlies. Okay, so those two are staying. You're keeping the stars. What are you doing? You're moving around like depth pieces on the fourth line? Well, you're the Leafs. You got no cap. So if you're changing anything, you're going from $1.2 million forward to the next. They got nobody coming up in the farm. Nobody. They got the two defensemen that are young that are down their lineup that they have. And then this kid decided to go back to college. That was the only hope that they actually had in terms of a younger player having them coming back and giving them some impact. So there's just not a lot of options. And so you kind of look at it, and I get what Elliott's saying in the sense of, if you decide to run it back, then you're saying we're essentially running it back the exact same way. And so to me, you at least have to, after 10 chances to close a team out and not doing it, you have to at least entertain the prospect of, well, there's opportunity cost every year that you continue to lose, but there's got to be an element of this between their ears. And eventually, when you're down and you're losing games, you can't look around the room and see all the same faces. Like, something has to be different for me. And so that's what I think the Kawhi thing is that if something comes across, which is what happened with the Raptors, where you get a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to make a huge, splashy trade that ripple affects things, but also has a real chance at changing, like, your foundation, you have to at least look at it.
Yeah, because I wonder what this, the psychological hangover will be from this series, because... You know, and I know the Leafs have a hangover every year, but eventually it gets to the point where the group goes like, I don't know, is the sacrifice worth it just to have this feeling of disappointment in the end? And then you get guys playing distracted and it all sort of falls apart. I get what you're saying about changing the actual DNA of the team, because we've heard so much in Toronto about like the veterans that they bring in for the bottom six. Whether it's Joe Thornton or Jason Spezza or Wayne Simmons or, you know, the deadline pickups that they've brought in the past.
Foligno.
But it doesn't, but it doesn't really change the overall structure of the team. You're talking about like bringing in another star player. Would they consider bringing in one on defense or maybe even in goal?
So I think the blue line is a very interesting part of the team, because they have a lot of guys, and there's a widespread belief that Giordano, who's from here, is going to become the new Spezza, in that he'll be the veteran who gives you some surplus value by taking the veteran minimum or something close to it. So assuming Giordano is back, that means you've got eight defensemen who are going to be under contract. They've clearly got to make some room for Liljegren and Sandin, at least one of those two guys. They just gave Morgan Rielly a contract extension. That leaves a real question of, like, do you move one of your other defensemen? Brody and Muzzin were just so important for them in this last series. I don't know how you move either of those guys. The big one is Muzzin, where if he carries weight around the league right now, if someone really covets him, I think if you're Toronto, you have to explore the possibility of trading him. He makes like $5.5 million. He's 33 years old. I don't think that they have the luxury of letting him get old on their team. So you're going to have to look at Muzzin. You're going to have to at least circle the names. Hall is basically as good as gone. So that's at least one of the guys. But yeah, there's going to be some interesting ones there. Campbell is the tricky one because, yeah, if you listen to that Elliott report, the Leafs lowballed him in the middle of the season. And he kind of acquitted himself pretty well. He made the All-Star team. He slowed down after that. But come down the stretch, guy played really, really good hockey. And he battled in a lot of those games. Like, that's the other part of this, is that, man, he kept them in those games where they fell down 2-0. And if not for him, the series is probably a lot over or earlier over. I've done 4 hours talking today. It's over earlier. And I think that he's got some leverage with that team. I just don't see those being the moves. I still think it's up front. Like, when we're talking core DNA, the core DNA has always been, it's these four guys. It's the we can and we will guys. And to me, that's always going to be the thing, is can you have four forwards that occupy that much cap space? Four guys who didn't leave anything on the table leave so little for the rest of your forward group. I would just think that that's still the area where if they're going to shake things up, that's the meaningful one. That's the one where there's actually real conversation about what that does to change your team.
Is JT Miller a name that gets bandied about in Toronto?
I mean, yeah, I love JT Miller. I'm a massive fan of his, and when he got rumored towards Toronto this past offseason, I think we talked about this, like, what would it take? Let's make the fake trade. If you can get the JT Miller trade done, if you can figure out a way around that, I would say that that's exactly the type of player that Toronto needs. Like, they just need a guy who can score a big goal, who is not afraid to go to a dirty area, who's a veteran and who's respected around the league, and, yeah, just does... Like, I love guys who make winning plays, and that's what he is. He's just a winning plays guy. I never really see him, and you guys would know better than me because you watch every game, but I've always gotten the impression whenever I have watched him that he's just the same, regardless of really what the game script is, that he's just able to maintain that consistency. And I think that's what you want if you're the Leafs. So I don't know what the price would be on him as a pending free agent. I'm sure Vancouver's going to shop him. The problem with guys like that is that what team doesn't want JT Miller? Like, what team around hockey wouldn't want to try to make that work? And so his market would be massive. And Toronto is, like I said it earlier, like they're in a spot where they don't have a lot of prospects that are coming up. They don't have a lot of capital. They've given up a lot of first-round picks. They've been chasing this sucker for a couple of years. And so, you know, are you going to overpay in terms of people that are young, cheap contracts that you have? Like, it's tough. I really think the only way that you inject yourself in that conversation is with Nylander. And then it's like, what is Vancouver giving back? Because that's a guy who's under control and who, frankly, just still has more upside at this point of his career. But, like, that's the kind of big-time shaker move that I am talking about. So, yeah, absolutely interested. Just don't see how it ends up working out.
Sheldon Keefe's line about the Leafs getting a lot more respect in the handshake lineup got a dry, wry smile from Bruff and I this morning. But on the subject of the head coach, I know you like to wager. If you had to place down some cash right now and put a bet on whether Sheldon Keefe will be back as the head coach of the Leafs or not, where would you be betting?
I would say that it's got to be like minus 200 that he returns.
Okay.
Like, not a monumental favorite, but like...
Sure.
Yeah. Basically, the Flames last night against the Stars, where you go, like, I could see the path. I could see the path to the Stars winning, but ultimately, you got to favor the Flames. They're the more talented team, blah, 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 blah. I just think, again, he's Dubas's guy. And so, am I really going to believe that Dubas puts this all and lays it at Sheldon Keefe's feet? It's hard to envision that stuff. You guys know this. Like,
I would put it on Halford. I would 100% be like, it was Halford's fault. We're going to make a change. If our ratings were down, we're like, Halford gets the axe.
And then I would reply with, but we have so much more respect.
Yeah. You should have seen the respect you were getting. It was just a massive. Everybody's talking about the respect. Yeah, hockey's a relationship sport to a frustrating degree. It's like everybody is in the boys, like the boys club is a real thing in hockey.
Yep.
And I don't think Dubas and Keith are in that boys club. I think they're their own club on the outside. And so I think that for him to fracture one of his only relationships that frankly runs like deep in this game for either of them, and to like, what happens to Sheldon Keith? He probably gets another job on a bench, but does he get a head coaching gig again? Like, how long does that take? I don't know. I have a hard time seeing it actually happen. But I would say that if I was MLSE or the powers that be that are going to decide on Kyle Dubas' job, I would at least have to know that he'd be willing to do that. You know, like I need to know that if he thinks that it's a problem, that he has to be honest about it in his assessment. Because like we've seen this before. Like remember when, for me anyway, Brian Burke brought in Ron Wilson, and it was like that was his best buddy. He loved Ron Wilson. He and Ron Wilson, two peas in a pod. Brian Burke fired Ron Wilson.
Yeah.
He's like, see ya, hey buddy. Went to college together, whatever. Like, you're running USA Hockey. Doesn't matter. You're out of here. Will Kyle Dubas have the ability to do that? I think it still remains to be seen. So I'll give it minus 200.
Okay. First, I want to thank you for doing this today, man. I know that it's been a really long morning. You've been talking for hours, and I appreciate you hanging around to do this a little bit longer with us.
I love you guys' show.
Yeah, well,
you guys have my respect. You have my respect, truly, in the handshake line.
In the handshake line,
I appreciate that. I also respect what you guys did this morning because it was a tough one, but the show was great. It always is. Thanks again for doing this, JD. Go get some rest. We'll do this again soon.
Absolutely. See you, fellas.
See you later. That's JD Bunkus from Fan 590 in Toronto here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Let's play that Friedman audio on with JD Bunkus this morning on Fan 590 in Toronto, just in case you missed it. We'll play a couple clips. The first one is about Kyle Dubas and whether or not this is his summer of Kawhi.
I do think this could be Dubas's, for lack of a better phrase, Blake, his summer of Kawhi or summer of DeRozan. I do think he will try to do something big, potentially. We'll see what he says when they have their availabilities, but last year they put belief in their group, and again, even though I thought they were better, it still didn't happen. And I think he will. I don't necessarily think he's going to do something that enormous, but I think he will consider it.
So could JT Miller be part of that is what a lot of Canucks fans are wondering, simply because the name has come up. I personally don't know if there's a match there, if there's a trade with Toronto that makes sense for what the Canucks want going forward, but this is what Friedge had to say.
I thought, like, I think that is the kind of player that they, you know, I think he is the kind of player they could really use. Like, I think they called the Canucks about Miller. I think there was some interest, but I don't think it really went that far. I just don't think it was a deal that was likely to be made at the time. I'm not even sure how likely it would be now, to be honest, but I do think that's the kind of player they should be looking for.
So the one team that I actually have an eye on right now in terms of if the Canucks trade JT Miller is Boston, because I don't know if you guys watched the Bruins get eliminated by the Canes over the weekend, but Patrice Bergeron sure looked like a player that wasn't coming back.
Sure looked like he was saying his farewells.
Yeah, he waited by the gate off the ice and basically shook hands and hugged every teammate coming off the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, I know he's the captain, but that doesn't normally happen.
Yeah, and
I wonder if he had told his teammates, I wonder if his teammates knew that whole series that this was going to be it for Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah, if you followed any Boston media over the last 48 hours, that was the number one storyline coming off the ice, which is kind of remarkable considering there was a lot going on in that series, including a pretty entertaining Game 7. One that I don't think necessarily signals the end of an era in Boston, but when Patrice Bergeron leaves, and if he does leave, it is some kind of an end of an era because of how long he's been there, how good he's been since he's been there, and then how do you replace him? Can you replace him? There's a lot there. The Miller thing for Toronto, I think it's more, Friedge probably hit the nail on the head where he said that type of move, that type of player, as opposed to that particular player.
Yeah.
I honestly, if I was to put money on it right now, the most likely outcome, and I know this might sound crazy in the aftermath because the loss was so painful, I think the Leafs run it back.
Here's how I think things went this season in Toronto. And this is actually, like, I do have some information on this.
Okay.
But they went into this season with basically saying that if we don't get past the first round or if we have another playoff failure again, one of the core four is going. Nylander or Marner being the most likely, probably Nylander. Here's the thing, though. I wonder if how they lost to Tampa Bay changes that.
Sure.
They played in that changes that. I think it's really easy to go into it and be like, if we don't get it done this year, for sure we're having a big shakeup and one of these guys is gone.
Yeah.
But then you play the series and you're like, we're actually pretty happy with the team. Like the one thing they don't want to do is bleed value just for the sake of making a trade, just for the sake of saying, like, well, we said that we'd shake this thing up if they didn't get past the first round, so that's what we have to do now.
It is a bit naive to think that trading William Nylander was going to make the difference in a series that, quite honestly, was a coin toss. Game 7, one goal. It was even.
Well, they could have put him away in Game 6, too.
Right.
But they didn't. That's the thing, and JD brings up a good point. Like, they did surrender the first goal in a lot of games. They did have bad starts in a lot of games. They put themselves behind that. They played a lot like the Canucks. You know, they put themselves behind the eight ball in a lot of games and were forced to come back. And the fact that they did come back was admirable, but it wasn't great that they were trailing in the first place. Very complicated situation in Toronto. We'll have to see first if Kyle Dubas is going to be back and then if Sheldon Keefe is going to be back, then what they're going to do with Jack Campbell. Oh, lots of decisions in Toronto, lots of decisions in Vancouver. And we will have some time to discuss Bruce Boudreau coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show. At 8 o'clock, we're going to talk to Mark Spector about the looming Battle of Alberta, which I think we're all very excited for. If you're a Canucks fan out there, who are you cheering for? Calgary or Edmonton? I have not made up my mind, and I'm hoping to go in the series cheering for nobody. But I put this question out on Twitter, and people were like, you have to make a decision. I'm like, well, I don't have to make a decision. But I wonder if one will emerge. Here's the thing, and I'll rehash this. The players, like if you're talking about just like players that I like, Calgary.
Okay.
because I like Tanev. I like Markstrom.
Jason Brough likes the Calgary Flames.
I like Toffoli.
Write it down.
But I hate the Flames, like, as a team. And for me, the logo always trumps the players. But the Oilers, so the alternative is the Oilers, right? And I like McDavid. I love watching him play.
Yep.
I think he's so exciting. Like, I like watching McDavid. I like watching Cale Makar. I don't like some other players on the Oilers.
I feel like you're just trying to work this to make it okay to root for the Flames.
No, I'm not.
Are you just working it out real time and you don't think you're going to come to a conclusion?
I honestly think, like, every time I say, I think, like, well, I guess I'll cheer for the Flames, my brain goes, no, you're not cheering for the Flames. Never. You will never, ever cheer for the Flames.
Okay, so on the subject of the Battle of Alberta, one of these two teams will be in the Western Conference Finals. This guarantees this all-Canadian matchup, this battle of Alberta, means that at least one team will be going to the conference final. On that note, PlayNow.com has all the outright winners, Eastern and Western Conference, in their futures category. Bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow Sports, your local BC sportsbook. So no surprise, the President's Trophy winning Florida Panthers right now are the odds-on favorite to advance and win the Eastern Conference and represent the East in the Stanley Cup. They're at 255. Also not surprisingly, Colorado is the sportsbook favorite in the Western Conference to advance and go to the Stanley Cup Final. The Flames come in second at 355. The Oilers third at 675. So if you want to take a look at those and see, maybe you want to put some cash down on some futures, go check them out now. It is at playnow.com. We have an open segment, as Jason mentioned, coming up next. Get your What We Learns in. Hashtag them WWL. What did you learn over the last 72 hours in sports? We have not mentioned a completely bizarre Sunday of Game 7s in the National Basketball Association. I don't think you will ever see what you saw between the Phoenix Suns and the Dallas Mavericks ever again. It was garbage time at the start of the third quarter in a Game 7 to go to a conference final. It was bizarre.
Wasn't it the same way in the Bucks Celtics?
A little closer.
A little, but not really.
Well, let's put it this way. In the Bucks,
a little
Celtics
closer,
game,
but it was still a blowout where the defending champs kind of went, ah, we're done.
In the Celtics-Bucks game, there was not a single player that matched the scoring total from the other team, and that's what happened in the first half. Luka Doncic had 27 points in the first half. The Phoenix Suns had 27 points in the first half. Anyway, if you want to get any of this stuff in, hashtag it WWL, what you learned over the last 72 hours in sports. Let us know. It's your chance to be on the radio. It is the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Rushing to center and down the wing. It is Marshawn! Scores! Marshawn! Scores! And the Edmonton Oilers are going to move on.
Plant steals. Up with Barnaby. Plant shot!
On a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Laddie queued up those clips and then stared me deep in the eyes and said, see if you can put it together. See if you can figure it out. I'm no dummy, Laddie. I read the NHL's press releases just like everybody else. So those were the two clips, if I'm not mistaken, of the last time the NHL had two Game 7s decided in overtime on the same day.
Correct.
Yeah! Which, of course, we saw yesterday. Artemi Panarin doing the business for the New York Rangers. And what a comeback by the Rangers. Look, I know that they were probably the second-best team through seven games of that series, and I know almost everything broke their way that didn't for the Penguins, but if you're down 3-1 in a series, you're down 3-1 in the series. It doesn't matter about the situation or circumstances. Scintillating comeback for the Rangers. And then the second one, of course, Johnny Gaudreau. I feel like we probably haven't mentioned the fact that Johnny Gaudreau scored the overtime winner. When we talked about that Flames Stars series, talked about how close it was, talked about Jake Oettinger, but it was Johnny Gaudreau scoring late in overtime to give the Calgary Flames the victory, so the Battle of Alberta is set.
I love how all three goals that the Calgary Flames scored were like impossible saves for Oettinger.
Yeah.
The first one was Toffoli on a tip. You're not going to put that on Oettinger. The second one was like an unbelievable shot from Tkachuk, and the third one was an unbelievable shot from Johnny Gaudreau.
There's people blaming him for that one.
I know.
I saw
just because it was a sharp angle?
because he went down into reverse VH.
He didn't. His recovery wasn't right.
Yeah. He was down on his knees.
I don't know. Maybe he was a little tired after the 65 saves.
So the shot before.
Like how many shot attempts did Goodbranson have? 30. They were just firing it from everywhere.
Flames had over 100.
Yeah.
Well,
over 100 shot attempts.
Shot attempts. Yeah. Sutter actually mentioned it in his post. Mm-hmm. He was like, "Oh, I deserve to win."
So speaking of
muttered away about that.
Speaking of the Battle of Alberta. I asked the listeners who they're going to cheer for in this, and I've asked Dom to throw up a poll on Twitter. Who are you going to cheer for in the Battle of Alberta, Flames, Oilers, or I refuse to answer this. Real mixed bag in the Dunbar Lumber text line.
Okay.
Chuck on Quadra says you have to go with the Oilers. McDavid alone wins that vote for me. Beth in Merville, Battle of Alberta. I don't cheer for either of those teams as a Canucks fan. It certainly won't be the Oilers. It'll be tough to say go Flames, but I'd rather see the Flames move on. Ultimately, she's for the Hurricanes due to Rod Brind'Amour. Tyler, cheering for Edmonton because I feel Colorado has a better chance of beating Edmonton than Calgary. And I would agree with that. I think Calgary could provide a stiff defensive test for the Colorado Avalanche. I think Colorado would have a better chance against the Edmonton Oilers.
Sure.
It's all over there, honestly. Colin Watson is kind of like me.
There's no consensus here, right?
Colin, no, there isn't. Colin can never cheer for the Flames. They are the Canucks' mortal enemies. Go Oilers.
Because we're on Sports Talk Radio, and occasionally we do talk sports here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. It feels weird saying that I'm going to thoroughly enjoy this without having a rooted interest. Because I think a lot of people think that vested interest and rooting interest, because it's sports and it's so black and white, that you either have to pick a team or actively root against one. That you can't just go in and say, I'm just going to enjoy the spectacle. I kind of likened it, my approach, like going to see a movie. Like, yeah. This is just an entertainment product that I am going to sit and consume and not be distracted by anything else, because I think it's going to be very good. I don't know if you watched the post yesterday because it was late. Frieg jumped on the hype train right away. He actually said on the air, this series is going to be effing awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the Dollywall bleep. He self-bleeped.
Oh, okay.
He said effing awesome. And I think part of this is, one, the long wait. We haven't had a Battle of Alberta in 31 years. So there's that to it. Two, these two teams very recently have shown that they do not like one another. The Cassian and Tkachuk thing. Mm-hmm. They've got all the pieces that you need to have a nasty, hate-filled series. Three, I know that Colorado's the favorite. I do. And I know that Colorado, you know, we did the sports book and everything. I feel like everything is really wide open right now on both sides. I like nothing. I thought that first round was so closely contested, aside from Colorado-Nashville, that this is a Stanley Cup playoff where if we get any permutation of a final right now, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, there's three teams in the East that I think all have pretty much an equal chance, and that's Carolina, Florida, and Tampa Bay. I don't know about the Rangers.
Sure, but that's 75% of the teams that you're giving a legit shot to.
In the West, I feel like Colorado's a really heavy favorite.
I think they are.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Where's the track record of success?
No, agreed. They could. St. Louis is going to give them a series, I think.
Here's the thing. With that series, Colorado's going to have a long layoff. Darcy Kemper's apparently going to come back, but he hasn't played since May 7th. And here's the thing. Keep this in the back of your mind, in your mind grapes. St. Louis was embarrassed how they lost to Colorado last year. Embarrassed. And they got faster as a team because they started to rely more on guys like Kyrou and Thomas being frontline guys.
Tarasenko had a bounce back.
I just wonder if this one is kind of what we saw last year, where we were ready to crown Colorado after the first round because they looked so good.
Sure.
But then that momentum died in the second round. And I don't think St. Louis is going to be an easy out. So, again, I think everything is up and available. So, anyway, getting back to my original point, I think that's why this Battle of Alberta is so hotly contested and so exciting, because there's so many different things that it means.
I had an old man moment after the Flames won in overtime last night. And people that haven't reached middle age won't appreciate this, but like this is such an old man moment. Did you see the crowd outside Calgary? All the fans cheering?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was quite a spectacle. And we saw it in Edmonton, too, with the fans cheering, all gathered together. This is what my brain said. Now, how old would you say I am if I said this? Even though it was Oilers fans and Flames fans, and I'm a hardcore Canucks fan, I said this. It's so great to see those young people all gathered together again having fun.
The youths in a big collective gathering. Yeah, I saw your tweet. It was genuine and earnest. It was very old. But it was very genuine and earnest.
It was.
But I, you know what?
But isn't it?
Did you get a little misty? Did you get a little teary that people were back and were back? And what's it called? The Red Lot, right? That's the one. That's the big one for
the Red Lot.
Also, does everyone in Calgary own a Flames jersey?
Yes.
This crazy.
They all bought one in 2004.
Oh, I've seen.
Barnes. Well, the Oilers fans too. The Oilers fans all have jerseys.
I think Calgary might have usurped them.
Mm-hmm.
It is because the Red Lot was all jerseys,
and Oilers fans are all wearing the wrong jersey.
The orange ones?
The one that their team isn't wearing.
Right. Yeah.
Don't know why they don't wear them.
I think it was great just from an overall perspective because maybe I missed the fans in the building more than the average fan, even just watching on TV. I got into the games. I'm not going to sit there and say I didn't get into the bubble games or last year's games when there were no fans in the stands. It just wasn't the same though. And I think when we see the spectacle of NHL playoff games, all the red in Calgary, Oilers and Flames fans gathered outside. Mm-hmm. Like that's playoff hockey to me. Yep. And it was awesome to see. Even as someone like who's actively cheering against those teams, I'm glad that an old guy, like young people are able to
celebrate together.
They're out there together. They're having fun. Like how much fun was Edmonton on Saturday night?
Look great.
Like after the game, how much fun do you think it was downtown? Like I bet there were, you know, celebratory fist fights. And in Edmonton, they just fight for fun, right? Like it's not like, oh no, everything's coming apart. That's what they enjoy doing.
They
just having a good bar fight.
Give each other a tap. They're like, we done here, we good, and then they go get a beer together.
Yeah.
Speaking of being downtown, I was downtown on Saturday. If we want to talk about getting back out and being back amongst the people. So we went to the Whitecaps game, and then quickly darted over to the casino so that we could catch the end of the Leafs game on TV.
Okay.
Packed with people, obviously doing their various card games and slots and what have you, but a ton of people.
Card games,
playing Fish, War. You couldn't get into the main sports bar at the back. So there's that circular bar in the middle of the casino with a bunch of TVs. A lineup about 25, 30 people deep just to get a drink from the bar because everyone was fixated on the Leafs game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. A good vibe in here, right? When the final horn sounded and the Leafs lost, a near standing ovation from the casino, from all the patrons. So everyone was that thoroughly invested in watching the Leafs lose. And I was there too. I was like, right on. That's great.
Did the Whitecaps have a barn burner?
They did.
That nobody was watching because they were all watching the Leafs game?
I was there. By the way, shout out to Traditional Souk. So him and I were there. One of our longtime texters.
Okay.
He saw me in the concourse, and he's like, what's up? And I was like, hey, I'm doing this instead of watching the Leafs. But the game was very entertaining. Despite the fact it was 0-0 at half, it ended up 3-3.
What happened in the second half besides six goals?
They just decided to take the restrictor plate off, and they were like, let's just trade chances. And they just went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. It was actually fun to watch in a kind of clown car-ish train wreck kind of way. Like, you know what you're watching is a bit of a disaster, but there's enough twists and turns that it keeps you really engaged.
So locally, the Whitecaps drew, and unfortunately for the Vancouver Giants, their playoff run is over. They lost game six to Kamloops 6-0. A playoff run that started with very little hope of any success, and yet the Giants bounced Everett in the first round, and then gave the Kamloops Blazers a series. It didn't take them the distance, and Kamloops, I think, at the end of the day, was clearly the better team. But we have some audio from Giants head coach Michael Dick, and here's what he had to say.
It's such a good experience for those guys and for our organization to restore that pride, because we weren't happy with the regular season and just seemed like everything that could have gone wrong did, and we found a way to fight through it, and we fought through it, you know, with 5 to 7 regulars a night in the crowd, and a lot of other guys to step up and get the job done.
I suppose we should mention the National Basketball Association here, if only because the NHL second round is set. Well, the NBA Conference Finals are set. Boston victors in Game 7 over the former NBA champion Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks. So it's Boston-Miami in the East, and it is Golden State and the Dallas Mavericks in the Western Conference Final. The Mavs go back to a conference final for the first time since 2011 when Dirk Nowitzki led them to an NBA title. I don't think that that was the Western Conference Final that many were expecting. I think a lot of people thought, hey, Game 7 between the Suns and the Mavericks. To put this in perspective, through the first six games of that series between the Suns and the Mavs, the home team won every single game. So it stood to reason that the Phoenix Suns, the number one seed in the West, who earned the right to host Game 7, would probably win Game 7. Not only did they lose it, they got absolutely blitzed. 123-90 was the final score. Luka Doncic had 27 points in the first half. You know who else had 27 points? The entire Phoenix Suns team. At home in a Game 7, I saw people, like the hardcore NBA pundits, saying that this is the most shocking result that they've ever seen in an NBA Game 7 because the home team just completely no-showed. The game was over right away, and they had to, garbage time started literally at the beginning of the third quarter. It was crazy to watch.
There's an article on the Arizona Republic, which is the newspaper there, and here's the headline. Was the Suns' Game 7 loss to the Mavericks the worst letdown in Arizona sports? Here's the competition.
Okay.
And they go through all. I'm not going to go all through the list. It's a lot Arizona basketball or whatever. I don't think the Coyotes made the list.
Just
nobody
the Coyotes.
Cares.
The Coyotes in general.
The Coyotes just in general?
Yeah.
The biggest letdown in Arizona sports.
Coyotes. And then there's nothing underneath the subhead.
So compared to the Game 7s in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, it was
there,
tough.
There was really no comparison. The Celtics took care of the Bucks in a pretty major way. It was interesting that Boston and Dallas each had their basketball team and hockey team in a Game 7 over the weekend, and each of them split. The Bruins went out, but the Celtics advanced. The Stars went out, but the Mavs advanced. Can you imagine the stress of that? Two Game 7s in a weekend?
Yeah.
Or Dallas had two Game 7s in a day.
Yeah. I know it's intense, right?
And what was the last?
I don't know.
When was the last time that came even close to something like that for a Vancouver sports day?
I know. I'd have to go back. I doubt there's anything even remotely close. There's probably a couple teams that were up on the brink of having their seasons end, but nothing like that on the same day is pretty crazy. That's a ringer for Dallas sports fans. I mean, the only bummer is that neither of them were in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Boston had, of course, Game 7 at TD Garden. The Celtics and Bucks, of course. I'm talking about Boston. The Bruins obviously had to go to Carolina, and they lost in Game 7. But if you know what a great sports weekend. It's just really unfortunate that the NBA Game 7s didn't deliver, because you could say, and it's funny, I follow Jim Rome on Twitter, and he said this morning, he's like, we can't understate just how much better the NHL playoffs were this weekend than the NBA playoffs, because consider this, five game sevens in the Stanley Cup playoffs this weekend, four of them were decided by one goal.
Yeah.
The only quote-unquote blowout was Edmonton's 2-0 victory over the Kings, which was a 1-0 game until the final minutes when McDavid finally put it away.
But it's funny, it was a blowout if you're watching it. Like
the
Oilers
ice was
dominated.
Super, and, I mean, you could make the argument last night that Dallas, you know,
I'm so glad Dallas didn't win.
I respect what Dallas did in the playoffs, okay? They're a very limited team in terms of talent. And they grinded their way out. I think the aggregate in that series was 15-14 goals. Like, it was as tight as you can get. But they had long stretches last night where they had no desire or intention to do anything than play Plinko, punt and hunt, and just flip pucks in and not even retrieve them.
Mm-hmm.
It was just to kill time until they got to overtime.
It was funny. My brain wouldn't allow me to cheer for Calgary. I was actually excited when Dallas had their chances. And they did have a few chances, though. They hit the post two or three times.
The first bit of overtime, they came out and they looked dangerous.
They had a chance right in the slot there where I don't know who it was that got it right off the heel of his stick, though.
Yeah.
They did have chances to win that game. And I was kind of like, I think I would have laughed if Dallas won, but then I would have had that regret, because then it would have been Dallas and Edmonton, and I think I might still have trauma from the late 90s and early 2000s when the Oilers and the Stars played six times in 7 years.
Played one of those goals.
Six.
The Todd Marchant goal.
Times in 7 years. And if you're an Oilers fan, I'm sure it was exciting to be in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. Dallas won five of those. I think of the six meetings, I think the Oilers won the first one and then Dallas won five in a row. But it was like that was no surprise that a year later there was a lockout. Yeah. Like and what I mean by that is after the lockout, they were like, yeah, we got to change this game because it's not very exciting. Like it was tough to watch. Mm-hmm. And I think I was just like, I don't ever need to see Dallas play Edmonton again, ever, even 20 years later.
Speaking of Dallas, that series with the Calgary Flames, Surrey Ryan writes into the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket. What we learned, Johnny Gaudreau finally got his Daryl Sutter attaboy. I saw that you got this on Twitter as well last night. So, yeah, I don't know how many people caught it, but in the handshake, while they're trying to get all the reactions and everyone, what are they saying to Ottinger? They briefly panned over, and Daryl Sutter kind of threw an arm around Johnny, and he was like, I'm proud of you, son.
You're welcome.
And then Johnny was like, this is great. I've waited all year for this validation. And he, I think, probably followed it up with, like, we fly at 12 or something like that. That's what Daryl Sutter would do.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say this. We always make a big deal about guys either showing up or not showing up in playoff time. Gaudreau was really good in a series that didn't really favor offensive hockey. Compared to what, I mean, Kachuk
showed up for game seven.
Kachuk and Toffoli finally got it sorted in game seven, but Gaudreau was going the entire series. And then to score that OT winner, it was pretty
okay.
good.
Okay, here's a question I'm going to throw out to you right now.
Yeah.
Is it weird that Brady Kachuk is in Calgary and kind of there, like, I know he's supporting his brother.
Friendship
but,
tour.
But it's like he's cheering for the Flames.
Yeah. Okay, so
it seems. It just seems
Matthew
I don't know,
asked
maybe,
about this.
He had a shirt on.
The Flames
yeah, they had a Flames logo on
yeah.
it. But it had a
Flames
but
a shirt.
But did it have a Senators logo on it too?
I don't know. He's got okay, so
I think it's hilarious, but it's just weird.
They asked Matthew about it after the game, and he said, oh, my brother's been on a heater since the season ended. So I think that this is kind of young guy just partying his brains out.
Hey,
in which
good, good
case,
for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, so I don't know
Calgary's
how
Calgary's a good city to party.
Yeah, so I know that there's part of it cheering for his brother, but I think there's part of it that he's like, I am going to live it up for the next month. And so those two things are kind of, I understand what you're saying. Like, you are a member of an NHL organization.
And you're wearing a shirt with a Flames logo
right.
on it. I'm just looking at the shirt right
now.
It says the Matthew Kachuk's Friendship Tour.
Yeah.
Is that basically like the nickname for the playoff run this year? Like, it's the Friendship Tour? Like, I don't understand what's going on there.
I'll have to dig.
It's great to see all these young people having fun, but I don't understand it.
Okay, and there is another wrinkle to this. I don't mean to be, like, old, crabby, negative guy, but Matthew and Brady Kachuk have never met a camera or a microphone that they don't like.
That's good, though.
It's
hilarious.
Fine. It's fine.
You know who they are? They're the Gronks of the NHL.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're a little bit more cerebral than Gronk,
well,
but the similarities
yeah,
are pretty
that's,
apt.
That's not like a huge bar to.
No, that's fair.
Which one of you joked about Sutter given the flight times in the post game?
Me.
Because listen to this from Johnny.
He's just telling us, he'll let us know when the next round is, pretty much.
That was his post game speech.
All of his speeches are like that. I remember.
Guys, gather round. We fly tomorrow at 9.
Yeah. That's all he does when they have these huge wins. He's like, I only got one thing to say, buses at 11:45. And then he just walks off.
This one must have been tough because he doesn't know the schedule.
Yeah.
It's not out yet.
He's just guessing. Yeah, he's just guessing. Okay.
Well, I guess they don't have to fly.
No,
they're staying
anymore.
In Calgary.
Yeah, okay, this is right. Steve in Surrey just texted in. The Friendship Tour thing is an allusion to how much those two are hated.
Yeah, okay.
And then they're trying to make themselves more likable. Amenable, stomachable.
So it's ironic.
Yeah, it's an ironic thing, yeah.
Okay, we'll talk to Mark Spector at 8 o'clock. That's just in a few minutes about the Battle of Alberta, which is coming up. And whether you're cheering for the Flames or the Oilers or nobody, I think you're going to enjoy this series. It's Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.